All right, let's take our Bibles and let's turn to Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12. And you can also get your handout out. Sound funny? So you get your handout out and then turn to Genesis 12. And so tonight we are in the Abrahamic Covenant part 2. And so if you're taking notes, this will be part 2 of our study. The plan will be that next week, and if you notice on the handout, which I will review in just a moment, the contents of the covenant next week, we'll look at Genesis, what's on the handout there under Roman numeral 3. We'll look at Genesis 13 and 15, those passages. So if you wanted to read ahead, that's what we'll be looking at. If not, that's certainly not a problem. But we'll look more at that next time. So 13 and 15 on the handout if you want to read ahead. And so what we'll do is we'll do that. That'll be part 3. And then part 4, what we'll do is chapter 17 along with the sign, which is circumcision. And then I'll go back and sort of fill in some blanks that I'm going to leave out as we go along. So there is a method to Pastor Stephen's madness. It's just hopefully it will come out at the end. But we'll do that, okay? So what we'll do tonight is I'll give you the outline. We'll review the handout. And then primarily what we're going to look at tonight is we'll start looking at the contents of the covenant, Genesis 12, 1 through 3. But what we'll do is we'll do, again, we'll look at the handout. I'll just do a brief overview of it. We'll sort of review last time since we weren't able to meet last week. And then we'll start looking at the contents of the Abrahamic covenant, and we'll use Genesis 12 for that tonight, okay? So if you have your handout, again, if you don't want to refer to it, it's certainly not a problem, but this will give you sort of the general flow of the study. Should be similar to what I did with the Noahic one. But what we'll do in this study is, of course, I summarized, and I will do this one more time, summarize Genesis 1 through 11, because that'll give us the setting of the covenant when it's given, the initial part of the covenant, and then kind of clarify the setting of Abraham's life. And then, of course, the Abrahamic covenant, when we're talking about that, where is the covenant, what is a covenant, unconditional, conditional, the parties who benefit. You see on the handout the contents of the covenant. At first, if you're not familiar with it, you probably are thinking, okay, why all these verses? Well, again, the initial giving of the covenant, in other words, the basics of the covenant are in Genesis 12, 1 through 3, and then it gets expanded or elaborated on. And hopefully you'll see that as we study. And then there's a sign for this one, just like there was a sign for the Noahic one. The Noahic one was the rainbow, right? And so there's one here. And all the men grimace when we do this one, but this one is circumcision. All right, so let's look at the introduction from last time since we only did this once. I won't keep doing this each time, but sort of a summary of Genesis 1 through 11. Pretty easy if you think about it, just at a high level. Genesis 1 through 11, so you have creation, you have the fall, and then sin begins to fill the earth. It gets to such a point where God has to judge. Not necessarily that he maybe chooses to, sort of forced, we might think. The flood comes, and then after the flood, God starts over with Noah and his descendants, which is where we looked at the Noahic covenant. So there is a flow to all of this. But then I pointed out that in Genesis 11, you have the genealogy or the descendant line that goes from Shem eventually to Abraham's father, and then Abraham, meaning Abram himself. So the setting of Abraham's life, an easy way to think of it is the world after the flood and the Tower of Babel. So you have the Tower of Babel, if you remember. God had said, in a sense, he says, go back and populate and fill the whole world, right? And then they didn't do that. So God, in a source, forces them to do it. There's Babel, the Tower of Babel. And then we see where there's this genealogy from Shem to, I'm just going to say Abraham, but I realize his name hasn't changed yet. And so that's sort of the setting. the thing that I'm trying to emphasize is Genesis 1 through 11, there is this sort of global focus. But then when you get to Genesis 12, it's going to focus on one individual whom is our study, which is Abraham, because it will be Abraham through whom God's plan of redemption will center on. So in other words, he's got to have somebody through which the Redeemer, the Messiah will come through. And so God has Abraham in which this nation will be formed. And ultimately, of course, we have descendants and so forth to Jesus. So that's sort of the setting of it. Now, if you look at the Abrahamic covenant, so this will be the Roman numeral 2 on the handout if you are referring to it. And what we looked at there is, okay, so where is the covenant found, the details? And I won't go back over these each time, but you have Genesis 12 we're looking at tonight. And then we'll see where it's expanded or elaborated on in chapters 13 and 15, those verses. And what you'll see there is the land. You'll begin to see some specificity. In other words, it gets very specific, the land that God's going to give Abraham. The descendants are sort of reiterated. That's going to be a lot. In other words, the sands and so forth, that's referenced there. And then Genesis 17 is the circumcision piece that we'll look at. So where is it found? 12, 13, 15, and 17. And if you get those, you'll have a pretty good idea of what the covenant entails. If I was going to ask you, what's a covenant, what would you say? Anybody have an idea?
A promise, agreement.
Yep. Right. So I used this one before. A covenant is a promise. I like to use that. I think that's a good word there. Or agreement, same thing. Between two or more parties to perform certain actions, a covenant might be what? Conditional or unconditional. So a conditional covenant, I like to say, has strings attached, right? And you'll see it in there. God would say, I will do this for Lucian if he does this. That would be the idea of something conditional. An unconditional covenant solely rests on the one who's giving it. So God would say, I will do this. Period. There's nothing else to it. So that's the easy way to remember those. So a conditional covenant would be one where God would keep his part of the covenant, i.e. promise, if the other person kept theirs. Now, we do have some like that, but what we have with the Abrahamic is unconditional. And an unconditional covenant, I use this as my definition, is different in that everything depends on God, which ensures what? It'll happen, it'll be fulfilled, right? So those are your main differences there. One of the ways, if you're curious of this, someone had asked me this, and they were listening online, they asked me this, you can tell a lot of times, it's not a perfect, but you can look for this word, I will. God has these I will statements. I will do this. Those are a lot of times are unconditional because God's saying, this is what I'm going to do. And then lastly, and then we'll look at start looking at the contents. Who are the parties that benefit from the Abrahamic covenant? Well, Abraham will see tonight the nation of Israel because that's through who it comes from. And then guess who the third one is?
Gentiles,
the whole world. There are those things. And that's what we'll kind of focus on tonight. All right. So having said all of that, anybody have any questions? Pretty good on that? Okay. Pretty straightforward. Now we're going to move into the contents of the covenant. So again, an easy way to think of this, I mean, even theologically, it's very simple. When you're reading at Genesis 12, everything sort of changes and shifts. Everything at that point is focused on Abraham. When I say everything, by and large, God's promise that he gives here will tread all the way to, you can think of it, to the book of Matthew in many ways. You can trace it all the way there. So everything's going to begin to focus on Abram. Now, we've got three verses, and this is pretty much the main reading for the day. So I don't know if anyone wants to fight over reading those three verses, but it's Genesis 1 through 3. And once the ladies get done arguing over it back there, we'll see who wins and whoever reads.
Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's curse, and all your families of the earth will be blessed.
All right. Thank you, Gene. So Gene won, I guess. Or lost, depending on how you want to put it. All right. But in all seriousness, so we start looking at this. I'm going to look at this in two ways. First, we're going to look at verse 1, which is God's call to Abram. Now, if you get confused, again, I'll point out when his name changes, but it's synonymous. So if you get, it's not a big deal either way. But we'll see God's call to Abraham. So we start looking at this. I mentioned this last week, and I know we talked about this. So technically speaking, you'd go back to verse 27 of the previous chapter 11, and you can see Terah became the father of Abram and so forth. So we do see that. That's sort of the introduction to Abraham is technically chapter 11, verses 27 through 32. But as we look at this passage tonight, mostly I'm going to try to stick to just the covenant promises, but I'm going to throw something in here as well. But first off, you see that God says, go. So this would be a command. And that's the way I take it. I take it as it's a command. I don't read it that he's saying, if you go, go. You know, so there are some, I mentioned some of this because there are some people that say this is sort of a conditional component to the covenant. I don't take it that way. I think that the only thing is that, as you'll see, when Abraham goes, he enters into the covenant with God. So again, it's an unconditional covenant. But here he says, go. One of the interesting things, though, if you ever notice the names of the Lord, if you notice on this one, it's all capitals, which is the YHWH, which is Yahweh, right? But one of the things about the name Yahweh is that Yahweh is the covenant-keeping name of God, which is what we're getting ready to enter into. But it also reminds us that God can be trusted to fulfill his promises. So you a lot of times see that name. Again, it's abbreviated. In other words, YHWH, it's Yahweh. That would be where we get that from. So Yahweh tells Abram to go. So this is a command that God is giving him. I don't take that to be sort of, well, if you go, I think that there's not a question there. He doesn't really have any choice. But anyway, moving on. So the first thing we see in this call is the command to go by the covenant-keeping God, Yahweh. And then a couple of things. Some of these seem obvious, but just worth pointing out. He says to leave behind. He says, leave behind your country, your relatives, and even the closeness of your own home. It's sort of somewhat in a descending order, if you notice. I don't read too much into that, but it is kind of curious because he says, leave the country where you are, leave the relatives, and even those close, in other words, the close unit, we might think of a family unit there with the house. And one of the things I think about with this is, you know, sometimes when the Lord asks us to do something, it's not always easy, is it? Sometimes it is, and I prefer the easy ones. I don't know about you, but the Lord sometimes asks us to do things that are very difficult. You don't have to do this, but if you have a Bible map, you can see this. If you look at the patriarch period, you can see where he left from and where he eventually ends up. And it's quite a journey. But one of the things in this is, if you notice, he says, I will. God is saying, I'm going to do certain things. And in this case, and here we're looking at verse 1, he says, I'm going to show you where you're going. So he isn't told where he's going. You know, it'd be sort of like God saying to you, and I know this wouldn't happen, but humor me a little bit. God says, you know, tomorrow morning, Linda, I want you to get up, get in your car, and I want you to go. And you'd be saying, okay, Lord, where? But here you'll see God says, I will show you. I'm drawing these out because I want you to see God is the initiator. God is the one doing everything. Abraham is a very faithful man. He does have his lapses at times, but he doesn't know where he's going. And this is what you call walking by faith, not by sight, because he has no idea where he's going. Take a glimpse, if you haven't before, at one of those Bible maps that shows Ur of Chaldees and just look. And imagine being told, go. I'll show you where you go and where you're going when you get there. And so this is sort of, again, one of those I wills. Not quite as specific as the other ones. But then you'll also see something that's part of the Abrahamic covenant, which is land. And this is really even relevant to us today because In the Middle East, land is sacred, and people fight and die and wait long periods of time. But one of the things with the covenant is that land is included, and later on we'll even get dimensions and specific locations. And so the question today even comes up, doesn't it? Who owns the land over in Israel? Well, God does. And so God is the one who is able to give it to and so forth. So that's just an interesting thing there. So in this call you have go, it's a command. Now, I will tell you, you might run across a few commentators that say this is sort of conditional. I don't think there's any condition here. He says, leave behind the country, the relatives, the house. Obviously, it would have been very difficult. He says, I will show you where you are to go. Once you get there, I'll tell you, type thing. And then there's the land. So this is an actual physical promise where the descendants of Israel will encounter or inherit literal land. This isn't a sort of faux or figurative kingdom or land. This is literal land, and we'll see into some dimensions on it. Now, I want us to look at something, and then we're going to turn back here. I was actually talking to one of you last time with this. Turn with me real quick. I'll read it. It's Acts chapter 7. I hesitated to do this, but then I thought, well, it might come up and you might read it sometime and be like, well, okay, hold on, wait a minute, what? Turn to Acts chapter 7 and verse 2. I won't dwell on this too long. Just an interesting, this is the real Stephen. If you think of Acts chapter 7, this is the real one. This isn't the one before you today. This is the real guy right here. And you know Stephen, he has this just glorious sermon speech that he does. And then he dies for it. They don't want to hear the truth. They end up killing him, so forth. So early on, this verse comes up. And I know sometimes if you run across this verse, it might be a little confusing. And I'll try to unconfuse, if you will, bad English there. But let me just read verse 7, verse 2. So this is Stephen, the martyr. He's in his speech, his sermon. And he says, and it says, Luke does here records, and Stephen said, hear me, brethren and fathers, the God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he lived in Haran. Now, and then of course he goes on to verse 3 and he says, he said to him, leave your country and your relatives and come into the land which I will show you. And he's quoting there from Genesis 12:1, which Gene just read. The question comes up, is, okay, so did God promise him twice? Did he repeat the promise? Or maybe in Genesis 1 through 3 is sort of a flashback. Those are your interpretations. So in other words, some people suggest that Abraham was told to go. He goes, and we know that they stayed for a while in the former passage. Some people think that God was sort of nudging him along, saying, oh, by the way, don't forget, in those three verses of Genesis 12. Some people take it as it's just a flashback. Some people say it's a second calling, sort of similar to the first one. So I just point that out. I really don't have an opinion on it really one way or the other because it could read either way. I just point that out to you. So just so you don't get confused, Stephen could be suggesting, if this makes sense, while he was in Ur, he was called, and then God sort of reminds him or calls him a second time. Some commentators think that. Some take Genesis 12, 1 through 3 to sort of have be a flashback. Is that following? That it was something that had happened previous or prior to his original departure. I really don't have an opinion. You could answer it either way perfectly fine. So I just mentioned that to you because it does cause a little confusion at times. But anyway, so let's turn back to Genesis 12. I just mentioned it again to you. So Abraham leaves, and thus he enters into the covenant with God. That's a simple way to take that passage, okay? He leaves from Ur to Chaldees, and we saw that in the ending of Genesis 11. They stay there for a while. And then eventually, and we will see this in a few minutes, he departs in verse 4 from Haran. And then we have this. So he enters into the covenant by leaving, if that makes sense. This is just an easy way to think of it. Before we start looking at some of these promises in verses 2 through 3, I'm going to read this. I thought it was a helpful because I don't want it just to be information overload. This is from a commentator on Genesis. He says, Abram had to totally abandon all that had been significant to him, and he had to do it not knowing what was coming next, trusting in God alone for an unknown future. His obedience by faith is an example for us who are called upon to believe God and obey Him, even when we don't understand all the implications. Have you ever had to do that? Believe God, trust in Him, even if you don't really know what is ahead. And that is what faith is. It's walking by faith, not by, well, God, you tell me every step along the way. And it doesn't usually work that way. All right, let's keep going. So let's go back, if you did turn, Genesis 12. So we see in verse 1, I think of that as the call to Abraham to enter into the covenant with God that God's making with him. And then we begin to see some things here in verses 2 through 3. Again, this is kind of a curious way to look at it, and I don't know if you'll find it helpful. God is saying that He would bless, and to bless Abraham means that Abraham would have the Lord's favor upon him. But you'll also see that the blessing to Abraham for those who come up against him will be the opposite, which is a curse. So the verses speak of a blessing. You think of God's, the Lord's favor upon us, sort of an Ezra-esque-like idea. But if you go up against Abraham, you don't have protection, you have a curse. So there's blessing and curse that's mixed in here. If you ever heard somebody that says, if you curse Israel, you could have the covenant, in other words, you'd have the curse upon you. In other words, if you go up against the nation of Israel. So there is this blessing and curse aspect here. But notice in here the phrase that gets repeated in verses 2 and 3 several times. I will, I will, I will. This is indicating that this is an unconditional covenant. God is saying to Abraham, I am going to do a series of things with you. And that's those three things I talked about earlier. The first one is a personal promise to Abram or Abraham, which is his name would be made great. Now, right now in history, in Genesis 12, nobody probably even knows who the man is, does he? Do you know the names of the three religions today that claim him? Not a trick question. If you don't know it, it's fine.
Ishmael.
So you have, well, Abraham as the father of it would be, of course, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. They all have Abraham as part of their faith. And you can go a long way with that idea of making Abraham's name great. Abraham had many sons. Many sons had Father Abraham. You can ask people who Abraham is, and many people will know. But think about it. This was a person from obscurity. And God says, I will make your name great. And has He done so? God has done so, hasn't He? Even despite or in spite of all of Abraham's, at times, shortcomings, just like you and I. So there's three parts here that God says, and you can validate all of these. In other words, you can go and confirm these to all be true. I still see a little bit of this. I still see some of this is still future. In other words, parts of it have been fulfilled, but parts of it are still future. But anyway, let's go on. So the first one was, of course, I will make you, or whatever, I will make your name great. We also know there's a national promise. What nation comes out of Abraham? Israel. Is Israel a nation that God promised would come to fruition? I'll tell you right now, to be honest with you, I don't mean this the wrong way, but to me, the nation of Israel is the most unique and glorious of all the nations. And the reason why I say that, I'm just speaking as a Christian and just as a person who believes the Bible, because you think about it, God takes this man from the middle of nowhere, and out of him, not only does He make his name great, He forms this nation out of this man. And no matter what seems to happen to these people, whether they go into captivity, Auschwitz, no matter what it is, they just, I'm not sure it's funny, they just keep going, don't they? It's just astonishing. And it's absolutely amazing. So the great nation, how does this work with the biblical timeline? So Abraham, eventually we end up with the three patriarchs. And then from the patriarchs, they end up in Egypt. God calls them out of Egypt. God eventually plants them into the land that he promised them. And then you have kings, and here we are today. I mean, all of this is flowing from this central promise here. So God says that he would make his name great. He would make them a great nation, and of course, he has done so. I still believe God has promises that he has yet to fulfill, in other words, consummate related to them. But then what's the third one? The third one, if you miss this, you've missed the Lord Jesus, says that he would be a blessing to the whole world. In other words, at that time. Now, so all the families, in other words, all the inhabitants of the world would be blessed through the nation of Israel. There's really sort of, if we were probably accurate, I like to think of this as two ways. Now, some people probably wouldn't agree with me necessarily on both. I think one of the things is the Jewish people make some of the most profound advancements in human history. Okay?
Especially medical.
Oh, go ahead. No. You're right.
Medical.
Yeah, and I mean, and you think about it, they're just some of the most profound things that they have done just on a, as Sue says, that type of level, horizontal level. But what ultimately is this speaking of? And it's our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And we'll see this a little bit later. But I want you to think of this as a different verse that I use with this. For God so loved the what? The world. God's promise was that he would work through the nation of Israel to bring the Redeemer, and the Redeemer would manifest himself and bring what is the ultimate blessing, which is eternal life, isn't it? Because as Sue was saying, you could have all the medical advancements without Jesus, and I'd rather have Jesus than the advancements, right? So sort of both are true. Now, some people won't agree with me on the advancements, but I just think history proves itself. I mean, that's just, it's just amazing. Okay, so I want us to stop here. And so I'm going to give you an example of something, though. But so God calls Abraham. He commands him to go. He leaves behind everything. God's going to show him along the way. In other words, I'm not going to give you a roadmap. Just go. He's going to promise to give him a land. This becomes very important in the narrative in Genesis. And then we see the blessing would be personal, national, and then we would just say maybe global or worldwide. Now, how many of you read, before we finish, and I tried to leave some time, I'm going to try to leave some time for questions. How many of you read verses 4 through 20? When it was snow, we were snowed in last week, we didn't have anything to do, right? No, I'm just picking. If you didn't read it, it's perfectly fine, but I would encourage you to read it. I'm going to give you a summary of it. Can't teach the whole thing at one time, and it has other pieces and aspects to it. But I want to focus on one particular piece because I want to show you in the text, and I'm going to do this on the rest of the parts too. Abraham is a man of faith. He goes, but he does at time wobble. In other words, he has setbacks. Do you have setbacks, or do you just always walk with faith with no setbacks? Well, you're different than I am. I have setbacks. But what I want you to see here is, verse 4 follows what verse? 3, right? All right, I got your attention. So God gives this great promise, right? Abraham wouldn't falter in his faith right away, would he? All right, so I'm just going to summarize this because obviously there's not enough time for me to, this is just simply too much for me to teach, but I really want to make a point here because this is an example of the fulfillment of the covenant was not based on Abraham's performance after it was given. It's based on God's faithfulness, and God's going to ensure it gets fulfilled. Okay. So in verses 4 through 9, and I'm just going to sort of summarize it. Sorry, Gene, I should have probably just had you read the whole thing, but I'm just going to summarize it. So notice here, so what happened? So Abraham went forth, right? Did exactly what God says. So he's entered into the covenant. The covenant is enacted in my mind. Notice Lot comes along, because next week I'll show you there's an example with Lot where Abraham has learned the lesson that he failed here. But notice here it says, so now Abram was 75 years old. Can you imagine? God starts to work in somebody 75 years young. So he keeps going in verses 5 through 9. And what do we see? So he sets off on his journey. The Lord's leading him. He reiterates his promises to him. Notice verse 7. The Lord appeared, Yahweh did to Abram and said, to your descendants, I will give this land. Abraham faithfully builds an altar and worships God. Everything's going well. Keep going. Keeps proceeding, goes through the mountains, and okay, everything's going well. He builds another altar, worships God, calls upon the Lord. You think of prayer, worship. Abraham gets to the Negev, and then in verses 10 through 12, everything changes. What happens? Well, in 11 through 20, famine comes. And since famine's coming, God's promise is going to fail, isn't it? Because, I mean, surely they're going to die, right? I'm being facetious because, again, think about it. God's just made this promise. You will not only have a great name, you'll have many descendants, and you'll have a nation, and blessing will come through you. If he dies, how can that get fulfilled? And so what happens? So he gets crafty, I would say, and compromises. So what does he do? So there's a famine, and so Abram goes and he leaves, and he says, to his wife, you're good looking, and so everybody's going to know it too. And so we got to kind of manipulate things because we can't assume God's going to do what he needs to do. And what happens when he goes there? Well, Pharaoh finds out. Who intervenes to fix the problem, though? Somebody read verse 17 for me.
But the Lord struck Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife.
Yeah, and if you read the rest, Pharaoh doesn't like it. He knows that he has been, of course, hoodwinked. He's been manipulated because Abraham has compromised. He lets him go. I only mention this because what you'll see is Abraham's faith will grow as he trusts more in the Lord, just like you and I. But the Lord's merciful to him despite the fact that he just fails, doesn't he, sometimes? Abraham is sort of like the stock market. He goes just like you and I, up and down, up and down. Who does the promise and the covenant rest upon? Is it Abraham's performance or is it on God?
God.
Right. Pretty obvious, isn't it? So there's a really good evidence. Now, before you get too hard on Abraham, next time what you'll see is Abraham then learns to trust God with the land. Now, I'm going to close with something and leave some time for some questions. Some of you know, I like J. Danson Smith's poems. If you don't know who he is, he takes verses. He's old. He's passed away, obviously, a long time ago. But he takes these verses and he forms these poems off of them. I call them biblical poems. They're really interesting. He has this poem based on Genesis 12, 1 through 3, and it's titled, and you'll notice the language, it's outdated, but it's such a great poem. I'm going to end with it. And he calls it Not Knowing Whither. I'm just going to read the first part of it. He says, not knowing whither, yet Abraham went. One slender promise for his rest, a land that I will show thee meant, wherever it would be best. In other words, God had promised him to go somewhere. He didn't tell him where it was going to be, but because God promised it and God said, I swear I want you to go, wherever God leads us is best, isn't it? And that's what you'll find with the life of Abraham as well as yourself. All right, so next time,